This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 12th of January 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 12th of January 2018. And this week the editors were Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faith. Now the main headlines this week are £100 million scheme for Junction 9, campaign launched to save BMX from proposed coach park, and support growing to save garden. May we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
£100 million scheme for Junction 9. It's one of Winchester's worst bottlenecks for traffic. Now, plans for a multi-million pound upgrade for a congested motorway junction have been unveiled. Highways England proposes major work to Junction 9 at Winnall, where the M4 meets the A34. It has developed a scheme set to cost around £100 million. It will be redesigned to create dedicated free-flow lanes, allowing drivers travelling between the M3 and the A34 to avoid using the roundabout. The roundabout itself would be redeveloped into a dumbbell layout to reduce congestion and improve safety, while improved pedestrian and cycling routes will complete the gap in the national cycling network. The proposals are also intended to support developments at Southampton Container Port, which are expected to increase freight traffic on the M3 and A34 by a third. Simon Hewitt, project manager at Highways England, said the improved junction would act as a gateway for Southampton and Portsmouth ports, with more than 6,000 vehicles using the junction each hour during peak times. It can often become congested, with queues backing up onto the main carriageways, he said. The proposal will resolve that by separating out local and long-distance traffic. With the new dedicated link roads, through traffic will not have to stop at the roundabout, freeing it up for local traffic and commuters. We hope it will bring regional and national economic growth. This road is also needed for some of the housing developments in the pipelines and a number of jobs being created. Dr. Mike Short, chairman of the Enterprise M3 Local Enterprise Partnership, said, "We are delighted that the proposed improvements have progressed to the stage of public consultation. This scheme is a key investment in our transport infrastructure to support the local economy by easing transport congestion, which businesses in our area state is a major barrier to growth. The plan was originally delayed by Highways bosses to avoid a clash with other schemes it is running. It was due to start in March 2020, but was pushed back to mid-2021 and is set to be fully open to traffic by 2023. The progress is welcomed by Mark Bolch at Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, who said delays at the bottleneck have an economic effect. Mr. Bolch, head of policy and representation, said, "Businesses across the country are highlighting the problems that delays at Junction 9 of the M3 cause them. These are not just transport and logistics companies, as others are finding that their staff struggle to travel through this interchange. It's also a far wider problem than Winchester alone, as Southampton, Portsmouth and even Salisbury are feeling the effects, with the latter seeing increased traffic levels as drivers try to find a suitable alternative. This is a critical issue right now, and any delay to improvements to this junction will only make congestion and air quality issues worsen."
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, campaign launched to save BMX from proposed coach park. Campaigners are fighting to save Winchester woodland used for BMX and mountain bike trails for more than 20 years from being bulldozed. Thousands have signed a petition to save the green space next to the St. Catherine's Park and Ride. Users of the trail say Winchester City Council plan to clear the spot to make way for a 14-bay coach parking area. A petition to save Bar End Trails on land owned by Hampshire County Council attracted more than 1,000 signatures in the first 24 hours and has since garnered more than 20,000. It says that the council move is to help pull more tourists into the city. It states, "We believe access to local woodland for both cycling and witnessing nature firsthand is more important than inflating Winchester's visitor numbers. While we support Winchester City Council's aim to keep coaches out of the town centre, we strongly urge them to make better use of the neglected Southern Park and Ride site, particularly Area 6, as opposed to pulling down mature woodland. If Area 6 is somehow not sufficient for the additional coaches, there are around 10 acres of flat grassland at the southern end of South Park and Ride, which would be far less disruptive to local wildlife, residents and cyclists." Rory O'Sullivan, 37, of St Cross Road, Winchester, has been using the trails since 1997. He said, "They're very seasonal, so we use them between April and October. We sometimes can have numbers in excess of 100 there, and we have people coming over from the USA. My three boys are 7, 5 and 3, and they're always mucking around down there. It's a lovely place. We have always had. It's kind of the antithesis of staying in on your PlayStation. We estimate we have put in around 40,000 man-hours by hand making it. It is very informal, and that is the charm of it, really. Anyone can just turn up and ride." He added that he had met Winchester City Council to give them a presentation on the site, but had since learned that they wanted to go ahead with the plans. "I think they've done a lot of survey work and put money into it. It's embarrassing for them to have to backpedal," he said. A County Council spokesperson said, "We are in early talks with the City Council around the possibility of making available land at Bar End for coach parking to help reduce coach movements through the city centre. We have started discussions with the BMX community about how they might be best accommodated going forward." A City Council spokesman said, "At present, coaches bringing visitors to Winchester are directed to drop passengers off in the Broadway and then to park at Worthy Lane. This means they have to enter the one-way system for both journeys, adding to congestion and air pollution. The land identified at Bar End Copse has been used informally for BMX cycling. Talks will continue in the coming months between the City Council, County and BMX cyclists, aimed at finding a solution which meets the cyclist requirements. No final decisions have been taken." And this is accompanied by three photographs, one which shows a collection of people of all ages and a dog standing in the woods with a big sign saying "Save the Woods," and another one which is quite idyllic picture, just the woods with just one dog in it, and it's very pretty and nice. And then finally, there's a hair-raising picture of a BMX cycle rider in one of the spectacular jumps at the Woodland Track at Bar End. And there's the cycle is up in the air and looking as if it's going to crash anyway.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is Support Growing to Save Garden. A campaign to preserve a much-loved Winchester water garden is starting to gather pace. A City of Winchester meeting, attended by around 40 people, discussed how the garden in Colebrook Street might be preserved for the benefit of the public. Concerns were raised that the plot with cathedral views could be redeveloped after it went on the market for £100,000. The space backs onto the walls of Cathedral Close and features a picturesque garden with a stream running through. A listing by Winchester estate agents Belgarum stated, "There may be future development potential." The meeting, convened by Janet Hurrell of the Hampshire Gardens Trust and chaired by Keith Lehman, chairman of the City of Winchester Trust, heard the estate agents have now already received an offer which has been accepted. It was greatly hoped that any prospective owner would be community-minded and willing to maintain the garden as former owner and Winchester MP Sir Peter Smithers and his successors had done. But there was anxiety about the price and the condition in the purchase that the seller should get 30% of any further future development profits. Steve Tilbury, corporate director at the City Council, told the meeting of the council was very keen to prevent any change to the garden as a public asset. There were numerous measures they could do to ensure this, he added, to do with planning and conservation. The garden is already protected by being in a conservation area and closely connected to several other listed buildings. Restrictive covenants from 1967, when Sir Peter sold the house and garden, suggest he intended to constrain development. At the meeting on Saturday, many people felt it would be valuable to have the site listed by Historic England. One criterion is a connection with significant persons, which would be fulfilled by former owner Sir Peter, who died in 2006, aged 92. He was a wartime spy, working with Ian Fleming, and, legend says, he was the model for James Bond. Gilly Drummond, president of the Hampshire Gardens Trust, said, "The Watercloose Garden in Colebrook Street is an exquisite design, adding greatly to the charm and character of the area in the vicinity of Winchester Cathedral. It is a delight to both visitors and local people, and richly deserves protection and conservation." John Holder of Colebrook Place said, "The path past the pond is a critical part of the city's tourist routes, used by many tens of thousands of visitors and residents. Any development of the site would have to be incredibly sensitive, but probably foolish. It's almost a tourist attraction itself." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the beautiful little garden next to the Colebrook Street entrance to the cathedral, where you see, running down the middle of the small garden area that is visible, a little gravel stream, and on either side of it, grass backed by a trimmed circular hedge. And at the end, a very pretty little stone wall with a brick wall behind it, and then nestling between the trees above the brick wall is the east window of the cathedral and the tower of the cathedral. A really delightful sight as you walk through from that end.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Your Say, historical items, Belgarum Diary, editorial comment, first person, My Winchester, letter from Westminster, and What's On. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Allnut, Molly Eileen Allnut, peacefully at Tegfield Care Home in Winchester, aged 104. Burlington Green, Anita Irene Elveen Burlington Green, aged 86 and unexpectedly. Carter, Doreen Gladys Carter, peacefully aged 89. Freeman, Paul Cedric Bernard Freeman, aged 73. Hellier, Jean Hellier, peacefully aged 79. Hill, Anne Elizabeth Nancy Hill. And Hill Mary Hill, formerly WRAC in Hampshire County Council, peacefully in Winchester, aged 95. Hurst, David Crossley Hurst, peacefully in the care of the ICU, Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 73. Jeune, Edward Ernest Jeune, or Frenchy Jeune, of Winchester, peacefully after a long illness at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 84. He's retired captain of the British Army, retired major of the Sultan of Oman's Royal Army, and retired mess manager of St. John Moore Barracks, Winchester. Long, Vivian Long, aged 93. And Macklin, Noel Macklin, aged 90, formerly of Colebrook Court, Abbots Barton. Marston, David Peter Marston, aged 87. Porter, William Porter. Rosser, Beryl Joyce Rosser, aged 89. Tate, Janet Susan Tate, suddenly aged 63. Turner, Peter Roland Granville Turner, peacefully aged 86. And finally, Unsworth, Christopher Robert Unsworth, known to all as Bob, at his home in Compton Village. Now we've got Christian comment, read by Jane.
Christian comment this week is why Netflix's The Crown is revolutionary. My wife and I love watching The Crown on Netflix. It's an account of Queen Elizabeth II's reign in the 1950s and early 60s, now in its second series with the promise of a third. The drama has attracted some criticism for its historical accuracy and making suggestions about the royal family's private lives. Is it appropriate to make and air such a programme? What makes the programme revolutionary, however, is not the suggestions it makes about our sovereign's marriage, but about her faith in Jesus Christ. It regularly shows her kneeling next to her bed to say her prayers before turning in for the night. Her first televised Christmas Queen speech, in an attempt to connect more deeply with the public, shows her reading a passage from The Pilgrim's Progress. This chimes with every Queen's speech that I've ever watched on Christmas Day, when Her Majesty always refers to her Christian faith. But the real revolutionary revelation is the televising of her coronation in Westminster Abbey. In the coronation service, the Queen made promises before God to govern her peoples according to the respective laws of her territories. She promised to do everything in her power to maintain the Protestant Reformed religion of this country. She was given a Bible and anointed with oil by the Archbishop of Canterbury in the same way as kings of the Old Testament were anointed by the prophets and, like Jesus himself, was anointed as the true heir of God's kingdom. The Archbishop then crowns the monarch. Everything about the coronation demonstrates that the Queen understands herself and her role as under the authority of God. I look forward to hearing from the Queen's own mouth her reflections on the coronation in an interview recorded by our very own cathedral member, Alistair Bruce, to be aired this Sunday on January the 14th, BBC One at 8 p.m. Most people would say that we live in a secular country, and I think it comes as a surprise to many that actually, according to the law, we don't. Not only does the Queen take up her sovereign duties through this Christian act of worship, so she has authority over the ministers of religion of the Church of England. But she also has authority over the ministers of state, as the sometimes painful weekly visits of prime ministers in the Crown demonstrate. Less than 17% of the population of the UK today were alive when the Queen was crowned. Back in 1953, not many people had TVs to watch the coronation, and so this Netflix series is retelling a story about our nation that may be revolutionary for today's generation. Like it or not, revolutionary, republican or monarchist, all power and authority by law in this land under Queen Elizabeth II is founded on Christian faith. Now, it may not stay this way in the future, as many people today don't feel connected to Jesus like the Queen does. But before anyone proposes to jettison our Christian inheritance as a nation, we must recognise the stability and legacy it has given us and offer us something better. And that was from Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, Canon Principal of Winchester School of Mission.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 12 letters this week, and the first letter is read by Heather.
Failure of management at charity. And there's a picture of the Wessex Cancer Trust store in Stony Lane in Week, Winchester. Maggie Crooks writes, "Sir, as a regular user of this charity shop over many years, I'm still dismayed at whatever caused this dreadful rift between the Wessex Cancer Trust and its volunteers. Not only was this a charity shop, the volunteers made it a community by their welcome and care of customers. I'm left wondering what on earth could have provoked what the business manager of WCT Wessex Limited describes as people who want to damage this good work. And another paid employee who maintained in a volunteer's severance letter that this business does emphasise cooperation and mutual respect. I think that the professionals, i.e. those paid, at WCT Wessex Limited, have damaged the Wessex Cancer Trust by their failure to properly manage change and by making arrogant and disparaging statements about people they have never met. Shame on you. I'm glad there's another charity shop next door to donate to and buy from, as I won't be using your nasty business again. Maggie Crooks, Sarum Road, Winchester.
And to follow that, here's a letter from two volunteers at the Cancer Trust, Lynn Struthers and Jackie Gibson, and it's headlined, Disservice. Sir, in response to the Chronicle article about Wessex Cancer Trust shop in Week, Thursday, December the 21st, Kate Allen, head of the retail arm and CEO of the Trust, does great disservice to all volunteers when she says there was unacceptable behaviour towards staff and customers. She has no evidence and was not in the shop on the day that the retail director told individual volunteers that they were troublemakers and to leave the shop immediately. She has not witnessed the way the retail manager spoke to staff and volunteers ahead of that awful day, when dedicated volunteers were humiliated and made to feel completely devalued. Zero tolerance against violence and aggression is not one-way traffic. Since the new head of retail joined earlier this year, we understand that six shop managers and three assistant managers have all left, either through dismissal or of their own accord. We further understand that all of them have made their reasons clear to Kate Allen that they could take no more of the attitude and aggression of the head of retail to them or their volunteers. As far as we are aware, none of their concerns have been listened to. The CEO and head of retail chose to ignore a request to meet with the staff and volunteers, and in doing so, condones the behaviour of her senior managers as displayed in Week Shop recently. We have both been volunteers in the Week Shop from the time it was opened and are truly saddened at what Wessex Cancer Trust has done to people who give their time to this wonderful charity. Volunteers are the backbone of any charity, and it is difficult to see how this charity can come back from what it has done to those members of the weak community. Lynn Struthers and Jackie Gibson, volunteers, Wessex Cancer Trust, Minstead Close, Hairstock, Winchester.
And Jackie Porter writes, Danger, Delay. Sir, the Cart and Horses Junction campaign, Make Us Safer, Make It 40, had huge local support of over 1,300 signatures. The first anniversary of David Learmouth and Jill Prince's deputation to the County Council passed by us in November 2017, but as 2018 begins, it seems we are still no further forward with the plans to implement the 40-mile-per-hour speed limit at the junction. Repeated questions to the executive member, Councillor Rob Humby, received the same answers. We are following due process. So, how much longer does this due process take? And why, if the 40-mile-per-hour limit was approved in the original plans, has it taken so long? Meanwhile, we have been enduring dangerous moments. More accidents have occurred, ambulances called, and insurance claims made as drivers see that other road users do not understand who has priority. Congestion on the London Road increases, and drivers turning right, north and south cannot see beyond the line of waiting vehicles. We are given the delaying tactic that the results of the Winchester Movement Study will give a clearer picture, but the study questions concentrated mainly on the city centre. As the gateway to Winchester from the north, the Cart and Horses Junction deserves investment for improvement. With a consultation on new arrangements for the A34-M3 junction just about to start, this is the county's opportunity to put the horse before the cart and make a really radical change here. And that was Jackie Porter, County Council for Itchen Valley Division, City Councillor for the Worthies, Main Road, Itchen Abbas.
Grab this chance. C.J. Ashcroft writes, Sir, I understand that despite earlier decisions, the City Council, or perhaps just Cabinet, is now wobbling about building the larger 12-court sports hall in the new Bar End Leisure Complex, preferring, it seems, to stick with the 8-court format. Like many people, I remain unsure about the real need for a larger swimming pool. But I appreciate the reasons behind it, not least that the council wishes to create a truly impressive leisure centre equipped to meet the demands of the future. So, I'm puzzled why the far clearer case for a larger sports hall has not been accepted. Of course, there will be an increase in building costs, but that will seem relatively insignificant if the council has to consider extending the hall in future. It is no criticism, but having worked with Winchester councillors for over 30 years, I know that very few have ever actively participated at River Park Leisure Centre, apart from election counts. Consequently, they must rely heavily on consultant analysis, projections, etc., which rarely provide the whole story. Whereas for those of us who have attended several times a week, over many years, changing pursuits as age dictates, we can see firsthand how busy the main hall is, providing activities such as badminton, football, basketball, minors rugby training, gymnastics, trampolining, short tennis, as well as the larger fitness classes. The difficulty of booking an activity in the hall at any normal time shows the current level of demand, and as Winchester grows, so will this problem. Putting Silver Hill and other civic disappointments aside, here is an opportunity for the council to get something right by creating an excellent facility which can meet sporting and general fitness and health needs for years to come, and giving the scope to encourage everyone to adopt a healthier lifestyle, which is a key National Health Service message. So let's see some sensible forward planning, together with a little courage in absorbing the additional costs, and create a new leisure centre which both Winchester can be proud of. Current and future generations will be very grateful. C.J. Ashcroft, Main Road, Martyrworthy.
Dick Selwood is unhappy. Sir, the Council of the Hampshire Field Club and Archaeological Society, the county-wide Society for the Heritage of Hampshire, is very concerned about the downsizing and changes that the Hampshire Cultural Trust has announced, Chronicle, January the 4th. The statement from the Trust says, "We are replacing our current arrangement of central specialist subject curators and exhibition officers with cultural experience roles that will be responsible for curatorship and exhibitions within each work stream." There are 2.5 million items in the Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council collections that the Trust manages, but that remain in the ownership of those bodies. They range from the massive archaeological archives through to the 20th century items in the museums and are of national importance. In particular, the archaeology of Winchester, following the world-renowned excavations undertaken by Martin Biddle in the 1960s and the later Brooks Project, at the time the biggest in Europe, is of international importance. These are no longer to be managed by experienced and highly qualified professionals, but are instead to be shared by cultural experience roles. This emphasis on cultural experience and outcome-driven work streams seems to be at the expense of the serious scholarship which the curators currently support, and the council is very unhappy at these changes. Those members of the HFC Council who are directly or indirectly employed by the Trust have recused themselves from this letter. Dick Selwood, past President, Hampshire Field Club and Archaeological Society, Northview, Winchester.
And Brian Harris wants to thank a good Samaritan. Sir, a couple of weeks ago our car was damaged by another vehicle in the Priors Dean Road car park in Hairstock while my wife and I were shopping. We returned to find two notes under the windscreen wiper. The first was an apology from the driver of the car that had caused the damage, with a mobile phone number and a request to call. Over the next day or two, attempts to call that number failed because the phone refused to accept calls, although a couple of texts sent to the same number went through. However, someone else had apparently observed the incident, and that person left another note recording the make of car that had caused the damage and its registration number. Without that second note, we would have been faced with a substantial repair bill. As it was, the car's owner and insurance company could be traced, and as a result we have had the damage repaired without cost to us and without loss of our no-claims bonus. We would therefore like, through your letters column, to thank the far-sighted person who provided us with the necessary information to enable us to achieve this more than satisfactory outcome. Many thanks, observant Good Samaritan. And that was from Brian Harris, Three Maids Clothes, Hairstock, Winchester.
It's followed by another letter headed Thanks, sent by Martin Taylor. Sir, I feel I must write to correct an item in Community News section of January the 4th's Chronicle. It was reported that taxpayers would be funding a new skate ledge in Kingsworthy to the tune of £11,500. Now, in fact, the skate ledge will be paid for out of Community Infrastructure Levy funds. This levy is paid by developers, and in the current year, there has been enough paid to cover the cost of a skate ledge. So maybe Kevin MacLeod of HAB Housing Limited, the developers of the housing being built on Loveden Lane, will be invited to open the skate ledge. After all, he'll have paid for it. Martin Taylor, Chairman of Finance, Kingsworthy Parish Council.
Elizabeth Thorne says, boom too big. Sir, though I do not live in the immediate vicinity of the Matterley Bowl, I pity those who do, as their lives must come to a stop when Boomtown is on, unless they go away for the week. Chronicle, December 28th. The event is, in my view, too big already and cannot possibly manage increased numbers. Drug takers and sellers are inevitably attracted to festivals, leading to crime, disorder and even deaths. There have already been two, and greater numbers will increase these problems. 2 years ago, the whole of Winchester was badly snarled up when festival goers left on the Monday. And also about 80 cars were destroyed by fire because they'd been parked in the wrong place. Things weren't as bad last year, but I don't have faith in the organisers to run things well, even with the existing numbers. With the great increase in traffic in the city as a result of all the new homes here, having a large number of extra vehicles in the area at any time is undesirable. The excessive sound levels cause problems to those living nearby, but will cause permanent hearing impairment to those attending. A safe and reasonable sound level should be set and enforced for the safety of all those young people. Otherwise, they will be deaf in later years. Not a happy prospect. Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
And Sue Kellaway requests a new campaign. Sir, with all the recent publicity on plastics in the oceans, thanks to the BBC's Blue Planet, I wanted to make sure I was recycling as much as possible. I particularly wanted to make sure Tetra Paks could be recycled. I found a site with an interactive map and looked at the local area. I was shocked to discover that there are lots of Tetra Pak collection points in Basingstoke, Andover and all over Hampshire, but none in Winchester. Surely there should be a campaign to change that. And that's from Sue Kellaway, Wesley Road, Kingsworthy.
Tim Bittleston writes about a seismic shift. Sir, I've just read your news item on the bid report concerning retail activity in Winchester. Traders report a positive Christmas in the Chronicle of January the 4th. It seems Winchester has defied virtually all the adverse reports we're reading in regard to the rest of the country. I would very much like to understand from where BID drew this data. The 10-year trend for footfall is actually a 40% reduction in real terms on high streets, factoring in population growth. And very few retailers have shown any growth in sales out of bricks and mortar outlets for some time. Most growth now is online, with a small increase in activity associated with hospitality. Even that area is now 87% discounted. I have no doubt Winchester might show a period blip in numbers given the draw the Christmas market provides. The harsh realities are, however, that our retail community is on the decline and our various authorities are not seeing, let alone addressing, the bigger picture. We continue to perpetuate a 15-year-old business model ignoring the seismic shift in spending and social behaviour. Your readers may care to reflect on their own buying activities this year compared to, say, 10 years ago. In addition to the 13 retailers who we have seen quit the area in the last 2 years, we are about to see a number of national brands leave in 2018. The landlords can only subsidise this area for so long. Meanwhile, we keep cranking up rates, bid charges and parking fees. Tim Bittleston, Main Road, Abbotworthy.
And Robert Barnes writes about Vital Engineers. Sir, you kindly published my letter on this subject a few weeks ago, and George Hollingbury's MP's comments are very welcome in Chronicle January the 4th. But with a national shortage of 20,000 new entrants to the profession every year, why tuck it away on page 38? I feel a little cynical about these years of something or other. But Mr. Hollingbury is right about the catchment age 7 to 16, the younger the better. Delivering the 7th Graham Clark Lecture to the major engineering institutions in April 1961, entitled The Engineer and the Commonwealth, His Royal Highness Prince Philip concluded as follows. Different people may expect different things from engineers. I have suggested they are necessary to meet humanity's basic needs of food and power, to develop and at the same time to conserve natural resources, to exploit the advantages of the industrial process, and to enable science to continue its investigations. Their original thought and technical management are the main factors in a nation's prosperity. In fact, while doctors are responsible for the bodily welfare of people, the engineer is responsible for the material welfare of nations. This is a very wide responsibility, but unless it is recognised by all the organisations which have a duty of educating engineers, they will fail to turn out people capable of giving direction and purpose to the progress of the world. There are a number of very good reasons why our nation has such a shortage of engineers, and we should be asking ourselves why we have had to get the French to build our next nuclear power station and the Chinese to pay for it. Prince Philip has championed engineering for more than half a century. Interviewed by BBC Today programme's guest editor Lord Brown in January 2016, he once again outlined the importance of engineering. All who can do so should follow Mr. Hollingbury's lead and help to fill this gap. If we fail, we will pay for our material welfare through the nose, as we shall be doing so soon for Hinkley Point's electricity. Robert Barnes, Chartered Engineer, F.I. MEC-E, Elizabeth Place, Winchester.
And Mike Simmons requests a BMX solution. Sir, read your article page 12 in the January the 4th issue, which concerns the removal of BMX track and woodland to make way for 14 Bay Coach Park. There is land next to the household recycling nearby at Bar End used for the privileged staff who work for Hampshire County Council. Why can't this car park be used for coach parking and let the privileged pay for their parking, as do all others who work within Winchester? No woodland is lost, which has to be good, and no expensive work required, so all should be happy. Oh, I forgot the privileged ones who might have to pay, but I dare say there would be some way they'd get their money back. And that is from Mike Simmons, Roselands Close, Fair Oak, Eastleigh.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. MPs have been discussing plans to put a 25p tax on disposable coffee cups to cut waste. We asked people in Winchester for their views, and Heather's got the answers.
Maxine Piper, aged 46, a private carer of Fox Lane in Stanmore, said, "It's a good idea to have recyclable cups, but 25 pence seems a bit excessive. Business with the cost of coffee anyway. Businesses should take the cost, the 25 pence, off for using a recyclable cup. It is a good incentive." Stuart Fox, aged 39, who works for Hampshire County Council in Winchester, he's from Parkgate, said, "Why don't they make recyclable coffee cups? With billions in tax avoidance, it seems, as usual, it's being passed on to the customer." Brett Halley, aged 65, a retired civil engineer of Romsey Road, said, "I think it's a good idea. The tax on plastic bags was a big success. It's a bit like the bag tax. If you don't want to pay it, then you'll bring one." And Isabel Mitchell, aged 19, assistant at Char in the Broadway from Romsey, said, "It's a good idea, but it would be important to have awareness. I think the tax would work. It has been working with plastic bags." And sitting opposite me, your reader Jane has got a reusable coffee mug. So there you go.
Keep a cup.
Yay.
And now we're going back through the mist of time for historical news items from our dusty old files, and we'll start with 25 Years Ago, read by Noel.
Yes, this is Friday, January the 15th, 1993, and I've got two items. The first one says, "Trees crashed and power lines tumbled as winds gusted up to 85 miles per hour in central Hampshire on Wednesday afternoon. The worst of the weather struck between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. Police and council officials had numerous calls from worried residents about unstable trees. Some were saved by immediate tree surgery. A lorry and a van were blown over on the A272 at Cheeswood Head, but neither driver was injured. The London Weather Centre reported a steady wind speed of 40 knots, that's 46 miles per hour, in mid-Hampshire, describing the gusts of 85 mph as quite severe. The stormy weather abated shortly after dark. Inspector Dave Lidford said police and council workers were called to clear trees, but some had already been moved by drivers." And the second item says, "Winchester City Council is spending £20,000 on a Moray survey to find out how residents view its services. Chief Executive David Cowan said the council needed to know how much local people understood about local authorities and where improvements or changes could be made to services. We are going on to an independent firm like Moray because at the end of the day, the City Council has yet to decide its stance when it puts forward its views on the Local Government Commission on the Local Government Review. The Council has 6 months to gather the information before preparing its submission to the Commission, which will oversee the most radical changes to local government since 1974. Mr. Cowan defended the spending £20,000 on the survey at a time when the Council is making severe cuts in its budget."
Jane's going to take us back 50 years ago.
Which was Saturday, January the 13th, 1968. The first item, Hampshire National Farmers Union agreed unanimously at a meeting in Winchester to support their national president in encouraging farmers who were not affected by foot and mouth disease to make stock available for sale on a commercial basis to help restock empty farms. The meeting in Winchester was comprised of five NFU group secretaries representing the county, with Mr. E.B. Jackson, county chairman, presiding, Mr. W. Keenlyside, secretary of Hampshire NFU, outlined the NFU restocking plan. He said, "No item of stock whatever will be too small." Only 12 months ago, there were 29 outbreaks of foot and mouth disease in Hampshire. The county has not been touched by the recent national epidemic, in which there were 2,206 outbreaks contained in 21 counties. So far, there have been 356,798 animals slaughtered, of which 180,664 were cattle, 77,592 were sheep, and 98,522 were pigs. Compensation will be in the region of £21 million. Secondly, the hope that the new £42,000 Nursling and Rownham's Village Hall could provide a centre in which community spirit of the two villages could prosper was expressed by Mr. Peter Barker Mill, the donor, at the official opening ceremony on Tuesday evening. The spacious modern hall, which forms part of a complex of rooms under one roof, was packed for the occasion, with the younger members of the community providing the floor show in a well-rehearsed and professional manner. Looking to the hall's future, Mr. Barker Mill asked if there was one single concept or purpose which it could house. Today they had cars, could get about with the greatest of ease, find and join the social life of other towns and villages.
Let's go back 100 years then, please, Heather.
Saturday, January the 12th, 1918. The announcement that Mr. James Falconer of Northbrook Farm, Micheldever, has been appointed by the King a member of the British Empire Order is of especial interest to Hampshire agriculturalists. The Order of the British Empire was constituted last summer for the special purpose of recognising war services of men and women alike in a variety of directions. Energetic and enterprising as Mr. James Falconer has always shown himself to be, the period of war has proved he possesses a reserve of knowledge and willpower that are of the utmost value at this critical stage in the history of our country. Second item is about the circumstances of the death of John Charlton, aged 58, a quarryman in the employ of Messrs. Prince and Son of Mottisfont. While working in a chalk quarry at Mottisfont on the morning of the 20th of September last, it formed the subject of an inquest held at Southampton. The proceedings were watched by Mr. A. Donnelly, Her Majesty's Inspector of Factories, and Mr. Prince of Romsey. Walter Yates, living at Lower Brooks, Mottisfont, deposed that no one saw the accident, but the deceased told him immediately afterwards that he stepped on something round and slipped. He was working at quarrying chalk in the usual way, and the witness had worked for the firm for 25 years, and it was the first accident he had known.
Finally, Noah's going to take us back 200 years.
Yes, Monday, January the 12th, 1818. Two items. On Monday last, the trustees and managing committee of the Winchester Provident Institution, or Bank for Savings, held their second annual meeting at the Guildhall of this city, the Reverend G. Heathcote in the chair. From the accounts had before the meeting by the secretaries Thomas Dean and Barnard Winter, Esquires, it appears that exclusive of £126.7 received that day, the amount of sums deposited since the commencement of the institution on the 1st of January 1816 is £7,712.9.8, the whole of which, with the interest and the profit arising from the sale of stock standing in the names of the trustees, previously the late Act of Parliament, has been invested in government debentures to the amount of £8,450. And the second item, in consequence of the increasing demand for parochial relief, the overseers of Romsey have determined on publishing a quarterly list of persons receiving assistance, with the amount of their weekly or occasional relief. From the first list, it appears that nearly 1,000 individuals receive weekly assistance, 526 of whom are children, and 42 illegitimate. Besides 141 in the two workhouses and 140 families occasionally relieved.
Get back to the present, because Jane has got an alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum Diary has three little alternative looks this week. Firstly, news just in from the Horn. A first dispatch from Winchester traveller John Pilkington, currently in the Horn of Africa. It's a little visited part of the world. Why on earth would you want to stay for a month, asked the immigration officer in the Eritrean capital, Asmara. John, of Calverwell Gardens, writes, how difficult life can be for Eritreans. Half her young men are in the army and the other half often struggle to make a living. Electricity and water are a real luxury, leaving some people trapped in a circle of poverty, shocking even by African standards. Despite it all, I've noticed that Eritreans do laugh and smile a lot. Most are well-dressed and many are well-educated. Crime hardly exists. Houses may be basic, but they're always kept clean. I found the market halls more encouraging, with plenty of well-stocked stalls. In the surrounding streets, people had laid out an astonishing range of things for sale on the ground, from vegetables to car springs to old cassette tapes. John is following in the footsteps of the 1868 expedition to rescue kidnapped Westerners. On his return, he will be giving a series of sell-out fundraising talks, details to be announced. And they are wonderful talks and wonderful photographs. And there is a photograph of John holding the map that he's trying to follow for his trip and wearing his Rohan gear, which he trials for Rohan, including a John Pilkington hat, which you can buy in Rohan. The second is Forgotten Architect. He's one of the forgotten people of Winchester history, but a former Winchester City Councillor, Judith Martin, is hoping to rectify that after writing a booklet recounting the role of Thomas Micklem. The booklet is set to be published in the new series of Hampshire Papers at some point this year. Thomas Micklem was a local architect who designed many buildings across the city in late Victorian times. Among his work is the Antiques Market, which looks to have been saved for after being earmarked for demolition in the Silver Hill scheme. The new ideas for the Central Winchester Regeneration, aka Silver Hill 2, propose to use the former warehouse as a centrepiece of the scheme. Micklem came from humble background but rose to be mayor. He also designed many domestic buildings across the city centre, and in the then new suburbs spreading across the countryside in Hyde and Fulflood. The photo, which is shown above in the paper, courtesy of Hampshire Cultural Trust, shows him in the early 1890s in mayoral robes in the new Abbey Gardens. And the third little item is Tatler praises Peter Simmons. More national praise for Peter Simmons College. The Tatler magazine lists it as one of the best state schools in the country. The magazine said, "It's not unknown for pupils at some of the smartest public schools to jump ship at 16 and head for the more real-world surroundings of this stupendously successful sixth-form college, the alma mater of Alexa Chung, Sir Ben Ainslie and Jack Dee, for example, at A-levels." The Sutton Trust lists Peter Simmons as one of the top five Oxbridge feeders in the country, alongside Westminster, Eton, St Paul's and Hills Road Sixth Form College in Cambridge. Tatler goes on, "It's huge, but they place great importance on pastoral care. The motto is counting in ones. Classes are large, but pupils are self-motivated and attendance and punctuality are firmly controlled. Independent learning is emphasised to prepare for uni. Principal Stephen Carville calls it cushioned adulthood. It is the perfect place for ambition," Mr. Carville tells the Tatler.
Now we've got the editorial comment read by Heather.
And this is also about the BMX track, which was mentioned earlier. "A perfect alternative for a new coach park," the editor writes. "The future of the unofficial BMX track at Bar End on the edge of Winchester is a real dilemma. On the one hand, for the last 20 years it has been created and maintained entirely unofficially by local youngsters. The jumps are spectacular, the imagination and hard work of the creators impressive. The young are often criticised for not making their own entertainment. Well, that can't be said here. On the other hand, the use has not got planning permission. But for some reason, the planning authorities at the City Council have turned a blind eye. But now the City Council says the land is needed for a 14-space coach park and the BMX jumps would be largely destroyed. There is an answer. Raised on the letters page by Mike Simmons and by this newspaper several times in the past. To the recycling centre, there is a perfectly good park car park. I do beg your pardon. There is a perfectly good car park next to the recycling centre, little more than 250 yards away. Now, for some ludicrous reason, in the 21st century, it is still a staff car park for employees of Hampshire County Council. There is no good reason why that site cannot be converted into a coach park and thus the BMX track retained. It is time for the County Council to end this perk for its staff. While it's at it, it should also cease the use of ground floor at Tower Street for anyone other than employees who need the use of their car during the day. All the rest can take their chances with everyone else in the car parks and park and ride."
And this week's first person is by Khalid Aziz, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, it's an unusually serious article by Khalid Aziz. It's called A Resolution on Drugs. So, here we are, barely a couple of weeks into the new year, and our well-made resolutions are disappearing like snow in the climate-warmed south. Usually, such commitments are all about personal achievement. Lose weight, be nicer, get more sleep, get fitter. The list is endless, and just about now we are inexorably beginning to slide back into our old ways. We are, of course, the me-obsessed society, and few of us see the bigger picture. So much is there to fix in ourselves. But at the risk of sounding like the Pope or some other prelate, we should perhaps be raising our sights. The extended break between Christmas and New Year gave me the chance to catch up on all those programmes recorded, but never quite making it to the top of my viewing list. Once you're down to less than 10% on Planner, it's time to act. So it was that I ploughed through what turned out to be an admirable series, Drugsland. Made in Bristol, but it could have been anywhere, such as is the penetration of drugs culture in our towns and cities, with the cooperation of Avon and Somerset Police, and no doubt actively encouraged by their estimable Chief Constable, Andy Marsh, late of this parish, this excellent series started off predictably enough. There was dramatic footage of 5 a.m. raids on somnolent drug dealers. It never fails to warm the heart to see how these low lives, handcuffed and led bleary-eyed to the waiting modern-day black mariahs, disappointingly no longer black. There were one or two thoughtful coppers opining that such raids were not the entire solution, but notwithstanding that, there was enough action to guarantee watching the next episodes. With subtle cleverness, the filmmakers had suckered me in together with my innate middle-class prejudices. I was confronted with the reality of the average impoverished drug taker for whom their habit was the only motivator in life. That and the need to fund their heroin and crack addiction, mainly through begging but with larceny and prostitution too, to garner the £100 plus a day demanded by their kindly dealers. We saw at length a young couple devoted to drugs but also clearly to each other. We witnessed them in graphic detail shooting up, finding veins in feet and groins when available blood vessels in arms and legs had given up. Both wanted to quit, and one went on to the methadone program. But it's tough to stay clean when your partner is still using. The young woman was particularly moving. Despite the ravages to her skin caused by years of drugs, she still applied her makeup in a dingy corner of a multi-story car park in Bristol, with the dedication and fervour of a teenager preparing for a night out with her mates. Next episode, we were treated to high-functioning users. Clearly from relatively well-off backgrounds, these youngsters kept it together in productive jobs while recreationally using anything from magic mushrooms, apparently foraged from fields within walking distance of Bristol city centre, to cocaine and tablets such as MDMA or ecstasy. The trouble is, such drugs like heroin and crack are not always what they seem to be. The final programme, cleverly entitled The Fix, invited us to understand how, in reality, governments of all stripes have done little to reduce the harm caused by drugs, content to rely on a law that's over 40 years old and allegedly not fit for purpose. 3,000 people, more than road fatalities, die of drugs every year. Each one is a tragedy. Many deaths are caused by impure or mislabeled drugs. At pop festivals, university volunteers offer free testing, and the police turn a blind eye, knowing that harm reduction will be well served. Drugs legalization is again on the cards, offering safety, regulation, and even taxation. The series made a compelling argument. But are there any votes in it? Ask your MP.
Jane's going to read My Winchester.
My Winchester this week is Jenny McAlchuk, 34, Director of Communications at Winchester College of Pitt Road, and she tells us her favourite things about the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? My husband and I went to Pecan recently for a rare night out. We have a young daughter and really enjoyed it. What is your favourite pub or bar? Well, the Queen Inn is our go-to pub. It has a great wine list and sits exactly halfway between work and my sister's house, making it a great meeting place. What is your favourite shop? I love anything to do with home interiors, and the Consortium on Jury Street is always packed with interesting and unique bits and pieces. What is your favourite building? My house. It's the building I most look forward to seeing at the end of each day. What is your favourite view? Most mornings I drive down Stanmore Lane and the view from the top is always beautiful. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Well, Jane Austen. It's always moving to walk past the house where she died each day on the way to work. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Winchester College. The history of the school and the buildings where the boys still live and learn today is fascinating. But if you're a Winchester resident, the chances are you may never have been inside the college walls. What is the best thing about Winchester? I'm a big fan of the park and ride buses, which I use a lot. Everyone is always so friendly and courteous. And the worst? Parking in the town centre. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I would love a greater variety of shops in and around the High Street. The shopping options can sometimes feel a little underwhelming. Describe Winchester in a sentence. An ancient city, unique in its beauty, character and people.
Letter from Westminster, read by Heather.
And it's written by George Hollingbury, who's the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley constituency and Parliamentary Private Secretary to the Prime Minister. A really positive part of our leaving the EU is the chance for the United Kingdom to set its own agricultural policy and do much more to help the environment. For decades, the EU's common agricultural policy has spent billions subsidising farmers based on how much land they own, and it has encouraged waste. The policy has also been inflexible. Certainly been bad for the environment, and it has led to some landowners claiming the money because they can and not because they need it. The Environment Secretary, Michael Gove, recently said this system, presently costing £3.2 billion a year, will be abolished after the United Kingdom leaves the EU, and in a welcome display of harmony it has been well received across the political spectrum. The major thrust of the government's change means, in the first instance, farmers will continue to receive the same subsidy until at least 2022, to provide the industry with certainty as we leave the EU. And this is sensible and will allow ample time for farmers to get used to the post-Brexit world. However, following that, there will be radical moves away from subsidy according to landowning, and towards support for farmers who plant woodland, provide new habitats for wildlife, increase biodiversity, improve water quality and provide public access to their land. Allied to plans to further improve domestic animal welfare way beyond those already set by the EU, it all means Britain will have some of the highest food standards in the world. A new subsidy regime will also, I believe, reward innovation, while improving the natural world and maintain the highest standards while we seek new global trade. In fact, having such high-end world-class standards will be a big selling point for the United Kingdom in finding new markets outside the European Union when we leave while still trading with the EU too. Whatever anyone thinks of Brexit, it is difficult not to agree with the Environment Secretary when he recently said that leaving the EU and its common agricultural policy is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reform how we care for our land, our rivers and our seas, how we recast our ambition for our country's environment and the planet. This is something that will have profound consequences for the environment of our country, and it must be got right. There will, of course, always be competing causes for support, which cannot disappear completely, but this is a real blueprint for a way forward. Many people will have differing views on how it is best to look after our countryside, and I know government is prepared to listen to those views, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity This country's lost nearly all its wildflower meadows since the Second World War. If a new subsidy regime can help restore some of them, then I think that is a flexible and good use of our money that our children and grandchildren will thank us for.
Here's what's on. 16th to 20th of January at the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton, there's Andrew Lloyd Webber's award-winning musical Sunset Boulevard. It's on in the evenings at 7:30. The matinees are at 2:30 and they're on Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday. And if you want to go, we'll get someone to book for you, 023 807 11811. 18th of January at the Anvil in Basingstoke, we've got the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. And that's a one-off performance at 7:45 in the evening. If you want to book for that, 01256 844 244. Now, the 20th to the 27th of January at the Chesil Theatre in Winchester, we've got Duet for One by Tom Kempinski. Now, this is on at 7:45 in the evenings, and there is one matinee at 2:30 on Saturday, the 27th of January. The way to book that is 0333 666 3366, or you can do it online at chesiltheatre.org.uk. On the 25th of January, in the Music School Hall at the Winchester College, there is a Chamber Music Concert 1. That's works by Chopin, Schumann, Martinu and Beethoven. And that's on at 7 p.m. in the evening. And to book, 01962 621 122. Bit of advance notice for the 24th of February. That's in the Victoria Hall, Sutton Scotney. And Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol is going to be read by his great-grandson, Gerald Dickens. Doors are open at 7 p.m. And you can contact Errol Holt on 01962 760 778. Or you can email them at Errol, that's E-R-Y-L, at boxcottage.co.uk. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 12th of January at 8:05 a.m. and it begins at 4:07 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of January, it ends at 8:01 a.m. and begins at 4:30 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. Now we're going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
NHS gets a vital winter health funding boost. The trust running Winchester's hospital has received a funding boost from the government to help tackle the pressure on services in winter. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Royal Hampshire County Hospital, has been granted more than £1.8 million, while the University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust has received more than £2.6 million. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We are delighted that our system has secured access to more than £1.8 million of winter funding money allocated to the NHS in the November 2017 budget. £973,000 has been awarded for existing plans for the winter. These include additional staffing we have already added in our emergency departments and the opening of the Overton unit at Basingstoke Hospital, which provides step-down care for patients who no longer require the high level of acute care provided in hospital, but are awaiting a care package that will enable them to return home. A further £919,000 has been allocated to three specific initiatives agreed with North Hampshire and the West Hampshire CCGs to support patients outside of hospital by avoiding admissions and accelerating discharges to the most appropriate care setting. These schemes will come online over the next few weeks. While it takes time to recruit and deploy staff into roles supporting our urgent care patients, so the full benefit of this additional funding will take time to be seen. However, we are hopeful that these measures, funded in part by these winter monies, will help us emerge from what is currently a very challenging position. And the editors have added another item, which seems to be a contrasting one. It's headlined, Cancelled Operations. Operations are being cancelled across Hampshire as the NHS struggles to cope with winter pressures. Senior managers say they are following advice from the NHS nationally to cut non-urgent procedures to help them cope with the spike in people seeking emergency care. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, said, "Like many trusts across the country at the moment, our hospitals continue to be very busy, with lots of people requiring treatment. To help us deal with the pressures we are currently facing, and in line with the recommendations issued by NHS England, we have postponed many non-urgent operations and outpatient appointments until further notice. This is not a decision we have taken lightly, and these will be rescheduled as soon as possible." A spokesman said it was too early to put numbers of the cancellations. Ms. Winfield added, "All patients affected by this will be notified in advance of their appointments, so if you have not been contacted, please attend as usual. I'd like to apologise for the inconvenience that this will cause. We are working closely with our partners at Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, the County Council, North and West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Groups."
And here we have new radio station for City and District moves closer. A new community radio station for Winchester has moved a step closer after plans for its broadcasting mast were approved. The new FM radio antenna will be in the Nightingale Wing at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The station will be run by charity Winchester Radio and reach a 5 kilometre radius across the city and to nearby villages. Anna O'Brien, chairwoman of Winchester Radio, said, "Winchester has a large and growing older population. Within our predicted coverage area, there are approximately 56,000 people, and of these, 20,000 are aged over 50. Our team of volunteers are really passionate about providing a hyper-local radio station to meet the needs of older people. We hope the community will get behind us and help make Radio for Winchester, from Winchester, by Winchester, a reality." The service will launch later this year once the charity have received an available frequency from Ofcom. The group's priority until then is fundraising to build and kit out their new studio. And this is accompanied by a photo of Anna O'Brien with seven other readers from Winchester Radio, all in their blue Winchester Radio t-shirts and carrying the microphones and looking very cheerful about the prospect. And I imagine when this is underway, we'll be passing on the details to the listeners, to the talking newspaper.
Changes called for after death. An audit of social care services should be conducted in Winchester following the death of a Hampshire pensioner, a confidential report recommended. The Hampshire County Council report, obtained by the Chronicle under the Freedom of Information Act, also recommended that senior management should sign off decisions to move someone to a new care facility in a bid to stop future incidents arising. The review followed the death of Gordon Peniston, aged 84, after a fall at the Otterbourne Grange residential home in May. Social care bosses admitted failings in Mr. Peniston's care at an inquest into his death carried out in October, and have this week said they have implemented the main recommendations. As previously reported, Winchester Coroner's Court heard how Mr. Peniston had been a resident at the White House Care Home in Sutton Scotney and that his social care was being funded by his family. But due to financial issues, it was arranged with Hampshire County Council that Mr. Peniston would move to Otterbourne Grange in Otterbourne. On the day of Mr. Peniston's arrival there, he had become agitated due to the move, and during a short period that he was left alone, he suffered an unwitnessed fall. Jacqueline Malley, a safeguarding quality and governance consultant at the Hampshire County Council, told the inquest that Mr. Peniston, who suffered from dementia as well as a condition which affected his vision, making him more sensitive to changes in his environment, should have had a best interest meeting before a decision was made to move him. And now a review into the way Mr. Peniston's case was handled has made a number of recommendations. It has suggested that as well as a senior manager reviewing cases where a move may be needed due to funding changes, more clarity should be given to the role of the new brokerage team, and review of procedures at the council should be carried out. The report also recommended that guidance for staff should be developed to help them deal with clients moving from self-funded care to council funding, and an audit of Operational Mental Capacity Act practice should be undertaken. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said yesterday the council has implemented in full the main recommendations made by the coroner at Mr. Peniston's inquest, which reflected the actions taken after our own immediate investigation into the circumstances of Mr. Peniston's death. We would like to take this opportunity once again to extend our sincere condolences to Mr. Peniston's family.
Engineers of the Future at Science Centre. Schoolchildren hoping to be engineers of the future paid a visit to Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium to learn about the industry. Around 80 children from schools in Hampshire explore the world of engineering as part of an Engineer a Future organised by STEM Now. Students took part in a Green City Challenge to plan and model a location for a more sustainable future with support and guidance from engineering STEM ambassadors. Each student also took part in a STEM Careers Speed networking session before presenting their ideas to camera. There are a number of STEM ambassadors working at Winchester Science Centre who volunteer their time to inspire young people to pursue learning and careers in STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and mathematics. That's STEM. Last week, the Chronicle reported how Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury was backing a national campaign to encourage schoolchildren to take an interest in engineering. And this is accompanied by a photograph of four young schoolgirls looking very intent and serious as they're being talked to by a couple of engineer volunteers.
And here we have biographer to talk about her own life at Guildhall. Renowned author Claire Tomlin, who is pictured in the article, will be signing copies of her memoir, A Life of My Own, when she visits Winchester this Saturday, January the 13th. The prolific writer has penned some 9 biographies of the greats, including Shelley, Dickens and Jane Austen, and has at last succumbed to writing her own life story, which has aroused enormous interest in the national press. The Guardian reviewer wrote, "You will find it hard not to be amazed and impossible not to be moved by the indomitable spirit that drives this memoir. It is, I should add, a hugely entertaining book." And the Times was equally enthusiastic. "She should be a heroine to modern snowflakes who melt at the first setback. Tomlin is like a glacier, unstoppable, inexorable, gathering grit and resolve as she goes. The book is poised and beautifully paced. She reels you in and casts you out." This will not surprise those who've heard her talking about her biographies of Pepys, Hardy and Dickens on previous visits to Winchester, but should whet the appetites of all those anxious to hear her discussing her memoir. After the talk, copies of A Life of My Own will be available for signature by Miss Tomlin, along with a selection of her recent oeuvre supplied by P&G Wells, the bookshop on College Street. Putting the author in the hot seat will be John Miller, who has himself written a veritable bookshelf of biographies of the acting profession, including Sir John Gielgud and Dame Judi Dench. Mr. Miller is a former director of the Winchester Festival who lives in Bishop Sutton. Tickets for this literary event in the Winchester Guild Hall at 6 p.m, which you may well be listening to this in time to get hold of, in aid of the local family support charity Home Start Winchester, can be obtained at claire-tomlin-in-conversation.eventbrite.co.uk. That is rather complicated, Claire with an I, claire-tomlin-in-conversation.eventbrite.co.uk.
And here's someone else who's been writing about Jane Austen. Katie brings Austen into the 21st century. A Hampshire student has won first prize in a writing competition to commemorate the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's death, writes Rachel Adams. Katie Chalk, from Barton Peveril College in Eastleigh, was ranked first in the contest run by Southampton Solent University. Entrants were asked to write between 1,500 and 2,000 words on a theme linked to the famous Hampshire author's novels. Katie's story, Lydia and Wickham, is a modern take on Pride and Prejudice's Lydia Bennet and George Wickham, with a dark twist. Katie, aged 16, said, "I wondered what their relationship would look like in the 21st century with the added dangers of social media. It's amazing to have won. I wasn't expecting it at all. I am very proud of the story and concept, and this competition has given me the opportunity to improve, which I will make the most of." English lecturer at the university and judge Dr. Devon Campbell Hall said, "Lydia and Wickham is an innovative and new take on an old story with a surprise twist. It evidences the enthusiasm and potential of a local budding young author, which is very exciting." And Nicola Carzone, director of English and Foreign Languages at Barton Peveril, said, "Katie did amazingly well with her short story, such a gritty reading of Austen's original." Katie won a £50 book token, while her college will receive a set of Jane Austen novels. Austen, of course, lived the last few weeks of her life at a house in College Street, now owned by Winchester College.
Victim cheat death by just millimetres. A Hampshire businessman attacked in his own home by a gang of hammer-wielding thugs has told how he cheated death by millimetres. Neurosurgeons treating the fractured skull suffered by David Thompson have told him that he was lucky to survive. The 49-year-old was assaulted by intruders who burst into his home in Forest Road, Chandler's Ford. Mr. Thompson, despite the surprise attack, fought back and the gang ran off, leaving him with serious injuries. Describing his ordeal on his Facebook page, he said, "Four armed masked men smashed my front door down in a seriously violent attack. They were waving hammers and knives in my face, so I gave it my best shot and luckily enough they ran off. Unfortunately for me, one of them smashed me over the head with a lump hammer, fracturing my skull. I've been told by the neurosurgeon that had they hit me a few millimetres to the left, I would be dead." Mr. Thompson's social media post adds, "I would like to thank my friends and family for all your support during this time. Also thank you to Hampshire Constabulary for the importance with which you are treating this case, and to our new lodger, who has a very large dog." Mr. Thompson is listed as director of TSK Interiors Limited, TSK Joinery Limited and Task Castle Limited. Police are trying to establish if the businessman was deliberately targeted or the victim of a random attack. Officers say the nasty assault took place when he confronted the men after they broke into his home at around 11 p.m. last Tuesday, January the 2nd. The masked intruders, wearing scarves or balaclavas to hide their faces, used a hammer to deliver a blow to his head before fleeing. Mr. Thompson was taken to Southampton General Hospital, where he was treated for serious but not life-threatening injuries. And this article is accompanied by a very gruesome close-up picture of the injury to poor Mr. Thompson's head.
And now staff take over special school charity shop. A charity shop in Chandler's Ford that looked set to close has reopened after its managers decided to take it over themselves to raise money for a special school at Compton. The new look store on Hiltingbury Road, which used to be the hospice shop, will now be the Hiltingbury Happy Place. Staff and volunteers held a grand opening on Saturday morning, where a red ribbon was cut to mark the store's official new beginning, before heading inside to cut a cake in celebration. Manager Liz Stevens said, "It was previously managed by Jane Poulter and myself for 3 years, supporting Countess Mountbatten Hospice and Oakhaven Hospice Trust, but in May they decided not to continue with the lease. We decided to take over the lease and start our own charity. It seemed a waste to say goodbye to all our volunteers. The shop will support Shepherd's Down School in Compton. We wanted to keep it still within the community, said Lisa. It just became obvious as we have 23 volunteers with 3 students at Shepherd's Down. We contacted the school and they have been amazing. We took over the lease on December the 1st with absolutely no stock, and within 2 weeks we were inundated with donations from the community. We had local builders redecorating the shop, building stages and relaying carpets. We're really happy because we've turned a negative into a positive. It's onwards and upwards. And to donate items to the shop, call 02380 260 384. And its opening hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And this is accompanied by 2 photographs of the new shop with the staff just opening it. And it looks as if it's a very large shop, and it has a huge sign outside saying the Hiltingbury Happy Place. And it looks as if inside there's even a table with little colouring pencils and pictures for visiting children to colour, as well as all the things that are, items that are on sale.
Villagers are cutting their use of water from the Itchen. And there's a picture of a lovely, calm stretch of the Itchen River, overhung by trees and with wildflowers in the foreground. Villagers are cutting down on their use of water from the River Itchen. 6 communities are taking part in a Southern Water Challenge and currently saving 6% of water compared to neighbouring areas. The supply in Cheriton, Kilmaston, Bramdean, Hinton Ampner, Bishop Sutton and Beauworth, near Alsford, comes from the River Itchen, and Southern Water is working with the Environment Agency and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust to reduce the amount taken. As part of the year-long campaign, water consumption is being monitored, and the company is asking customers to use less to help protect the river and its wildlife. Throughout the challenge, Southern Water has been offering residents, schools and community groups free home visits and leaflets, postcards and a door-knocking campaign have now reached every home in the area. Free water-efficient products on showers, toilets and taps are being installed where requested. Ben Earle, the efficiency manager, said, "Every drop we save will protect the River Itchen and its wildlife. We are really grateful for residents' efforts so far, and we are doing our best by cutting leaks, investing in new equipment to monitor leakage closely in the area, but there's still a long way to go. Daily water consumption in this area is about 180 litres per person, well above the region's average of 130 litres. Rachel Greenwood, parish clerk for Bramdean and Hinton Ampner, recently had a water-saving visit. She said, "The audit took no more than 30 minutes and Aqualogic fitted devices appropriate to our home. There was no hard sell, just helpful advice on saving water. And seeing how quickly the new water butt filled up made me realise how much rainwater had been wasted in the past." To join the challenge and sign up for a home visit, southernwater.co.uk/itchenchallenge. That's southernwater.co.uk/itchenchallenge.
A lorry overturned near Winchester, blocking one of Hampshire's busiest commuter routes on Wednesday. A driver suffered minor injuries after the vehicle crashed on the A34 southbound close to the highway's depot near Junction 9 interchange near Winnell at about 6 a.m. Scores of drivers were stuck behind the crash and the A34 southbound from Bullington Cross was closed, while drivers on the A33 at Kingsworthy also faced long delays. The driver was freed from the vehicle by firefighters and taken to University Hospital Southampton with minor injuries. Firefighters from Winchester, Southampton, Eastleigh attended the incident, which involved what the police say was a 44-ton articulated lorry. A spokesperson said, "We were called by Hampshire Police Control at 5:57 a.m, informing us of an HGV having rolled onto its side on the A34 southbound, blocking the carriageway, with the driver reported as being trapped in the cab. We sent a paramedic team leader in a rapid response vehicle, an ambulance, and our hazardous area response team." Ironically, the day before, Highways England unveiled £100 million plans to ease congestion there.
And the bus on the road to nowhere. Winchester High Street came to a standstill on Monday afternoon when a bus appeared to take a wrong turning and ended up stuck in the pedestrian zone. The Wheelers bus, a number 6 to Stockbridge via Hairstock, navigated the anti-terrorism barriers on the high street before heading towards Pret-a-Manger. Upon realising that it was not possible to turn left towards the cathedral or indeed go further in any direction, the bus was forced to carry out a very careful 3-point turn in front of confused onlookers. And there's a delightful photograph of the red Wheelers bus somehow having got itself into the middle of the pedestrian zone in the middle of Winchester and not having any idea where it's going to go from there.
Right, that concludes the excerpt for the week ending the 12th of January 2018. Thank you to our editors Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch of memories tick preparation teams, and thanks to our readers Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.